now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Hey, everybody. I hope everybody is having a pleasant day or a pleasant evening. So just want to welcome you to tonight's show, Reclaiming Authenticity. Reclaiming that which has always been in you. In fact, reclaiming that which you have always been. I'm Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me or if you want to leave me any of your comments about tonight's show, just invite you to visit that website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. That is all one word right there. So www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And if you happen to get the inkling that you would like to call in and be part of the show with any questions or comments, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And as usual, I will be taking your calls after the break. Now, just in case you cannot spend the entire hour with me this evening, you know, these broadcasts are also podcasted, so have no fear in case you want to go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows. Just get on that website and then click on down, and you'll see where the archives are located. And click on that, and you can pull up any particular show that you would like to listen to. All right. Well, I always have to take time out because there's always new listeners, and I always just want to bring them on board and just say, you know, welcome aboard, and just share a little bit about two deep-seated beliefs that have really helped shape my outlook on reclaiming our authentic selves as souls. In fact, kind of ironically, this is the same philosophy that I share with clients, you know, whenever I'm counseling them, as well as I share this with kids and teenagers, you know, regarding how and why I work with them the way that I do. And the first is that I truly believe that people have the answers within themselves. Because after all, you know the kind of life you want to live, how you feel, what brings you peace and joy and hope and so forth, and you know what doesn't. And sometimes we're in the wrong place at the wrong time and something traumatic happens to us, or maybe we thought that we've dealt with an experience from our past and only to discover later that, you know, these unresolved issues keep popping up again and again, or we keep making the same mistakes over again and again. And now we realize this, we have to go back and go deeper into our healing. But you know, as the famous poet and writer Ralph Waldo Emerson once said, he wrote that what lies behind us and what lies before us, these are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. And I'm in total agreement with that particular statement, that particular perspective, because it is true. We carry a lot of good things within us, and yet we fail to look within. And this taps into the second belief that I've carried around in my life for decades. And it is that I believe that everybody comes into this world with what they already need in terms, you know, this life in terms of their giftedness or their talents or their skills or their graces or their personalities and so on and so forth. So in other words, the very best parts of who you are, as well as the potential for knowing yourself as a soul, is already with you. It's already there. You just need to discover it. And I've shared on more than one occasion, just with my Hindi friends, love them to pieces, that they've really helped me understand, you know, the best that lies within and how we've already come into the world with many, 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 many blessings, one after another, many good things that we bring into this world, and that those things are not just for ourselves. In fact, more importantly, those things, our giftedness, our talents, skills, graces, personalities, and so forth, the very best of who you are, well, those are often meant for somebody else. Other people need the very best from us, and we need the very best from others. And so we already come in with this connection that we don't live as individuals. I mean, that's an illusion. But because we have experiences that I like to call as part of our shared humanity, we also come into the world already with the connectedness that we, for some reason or another, we forget that as we grow up and grow older and so forth. But, you know, this is what reclaiming authenticity is all about, remembering who you are, remembering, you know, all the good things that you brought into this world, your authentic self, your authentic voice, your authentic person as a soul. Because, you know, you see, even though we may have had some awful and very traumatic experiences, you know, we may tend to stop believing that, you know, we've come into this world already full of value, dignity, and worth, as well as we may feel like we need to hide our giftedness or our talents or our skills so that other people will not take advantage of them, so that they will not exploit them. But either way, we end up going through this life thinking from, speaking from, and even living from a place of woundedness instead of from a place of healing and grace and love and peace and wholeness. Because after all, we are these things and so much more. We just don't fully realize who we truly are yet. But as we look within and so forth, we discover that perhaps the best of who we are, those things have been lying dormant. Full realization of who we are has been lying dormant until that discovery. And then it comes in and it makes total sense to us then. And we fully embrace it, and we learn to live as a soul in this world. And now, the reason that we don't fully realize who we are yet, the reason is that because of all, for all of our experiences, we take in all these things through our five senses, you know, of sight and sound and taste and touch and smell. And these are all very good. These are all things that are very limited. You know, it's kind of like the empirical evidence that we can measure. You know, what does that smell like? What does that look like? How often do I see it? How often does it touch me? How often do I hear it? And so forth. You know, empirical evidence that is meant to be measured. But yet also, it is going through a constant interpretation by our mind. And, you know, as a result, it doesn't take much, because that's how we build our understanding of the world around us, and a very limited understanding of who we are, because we might convince ourselves that, well, if I can see it, then it must be true. Seeing is believing, right? You've heard that one before. Or if we can hear it, well, then that must be true. And if I can touch it, well, then that must be true. I can put my hands around it. I can hold it. As well as other sensory-related experiences that we believe to be the end-all, be-all truth. Because, well, we can see it. We can smell it. We can hear it. We can taste it. We can touch it, and so forth. However, as I said, these sensory perceptions are so limited. Because what is taken in through the brain, the mind comes in and interprets what we have seen and heard and tasted and touched and smelled, based on our limited experiences. And we tend to forget very quickly that the holiest and the most transformative experiences touch the soul. So again, you've heard me say this many times on this broadcast, you know, don't go off searching for something that you already have. You know, that's just the classic example of the Wizard of Oz. That's the classic example of you know, my favorite book, The Alchemist. That's the classic example of what irony is. That which we have been in search of, it's already been with us. It's always right in front of us. You know, discover who you are and be that soulful presence in the world. And, you know, this full realization of who we are as souls liberates us. Because once we come to that realization, it's like, what are we worried about then? You know, what do we have to be concerned about? Yes, we have to contend with, you know, being in the world and so forth. But as far as moving it over into the camp of worried, it just doesn't apply. Because even Jesus himself said that the truth sets us free. I mean, why go back into the prison as if we could? You know, the truth sets us free. And he said this into the context as he was pointing to a higher truth that we are all souls connected to God since the beginning. And we're not exclusively the body, but also embracing the fullness and the ability to live as souls in this world. And even elsewhere in the Bible, when God was calling Jeremiah to be a prophet unto the nations, as it says, he spoke these words to him. He said, look, Jeremiah, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. I appointed you as a prophet to the nations, so on and so forth. And, you know, once I, you know, just sat with that particular passage, that before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. I mean, that literally blew my mind, because it was so hard for me to grasp the reality that we existed prior to taking on the physical. You know, in a sense, a body that gives the form to our formless souls. In fact, how often do we limit ourselves to settling for the form? You know, the empirical evidence that we can measure through the form. Again, if we can see it, it must be true. If we hear it, it must be true. And that's very, very limited. And as a result, we often give up exploring higher truths. Because how can you measure the soul with, let's say, a bathroom scale or a radar detector or a tape measure or a yardstick or any other implement that measures the length of something or the weight of something or the frequency of something and so on and so forth? You just can't, because those things are meant to measure empirical data. But how are you going to measure higher truths? Because still, the soul is boundless, it's eternal, and therefore these truths can't be measured, but they are experienced from life to life and soul to soul. I also shared in the last broadcast a quote from my teacher, Swami Paramanand, from the Akhand Paradham Ashram in Haridwar, India, who said that in this context of discovering who you are and going on to higher consciousness, he says that this ocean of this worldly existence, which is experienced through our five senses, this ocean gets crossed easily, having climbed the highest mountains and the deepest waters and even going through the fire. You know, there is nothing but pure consciousness that you will find. So come up the mountain. However, the problem is that you don't leave your old ways of thinking and seeing behind. Again, what we think, how we interpret what we see and taste and touch and all the empirical data, very, very limited. There are greater truths out there. But like I said, and this is what reclaiming authenticity is all about, because it can be summed up in one word, one of my favorite words, namaste, which roughly translated, because I see myself as a soul of light. This awareness allows me to greet the lighted soul of who you are, even if you don't see it in yourself. Well, how many of you out there dream? Yeah, we all do.
Okay.
It's a part of a normal state of consciousness. We often go through a 90-minute sleep cycle every night. We you know, go deeper and deeper. You know, we have an awakeness, and then we get drowsy. We doze off, and we go a little deeper and a little deeper, and then we hit the REM sleep, which is the dream, and then the deep sleep, and then we come back up again, and we just go back down again. We repeat these cycles many times, but it's often on a 90-minute sleep cycle. Interestingly enough, that dogs are on a 20-minute sleep cycle. You know, just kind of ironic that they can be, when you come home from work or wherever, you know, dogs are jumping around and they're happy and delighted to see you and everything. And in a matter of minutes, they're passed out. They're out cold. They're just snoring away because they have a sleep cycle that happens so fast, you know, 20 minutes compared to our 90 minutes. But anyway, you know, dreaming is a part of a normal state of consciousness because we do have the waking state, we have the deep sleep state, and then we have the dreaming state. And all of these different states of consciousness are, like I said, different, yet are also part of an overall consciousness, whereby a higher level of consciousness bears witness to these various states. Okay, still, you know, there are times when our dreams can be very, very vivid and contain specific messages or themes for us to consider, especially if they are repetitive. Well, I want to share with you, since we're on the subject of dreams, this is something that the Swiss psychiatrist Carl Jung, who was a contemporary of Freud, was just fascinated with. Freud was also fascinated by dreams, but Jung took it in a different direction, which, you know, since here they were contemporaries of each other, when they found out they didn't agree on many things, well, let's say Freud took his toys and went home, and Carl Jung took his toys and went home, and, you know, they did great contributions to the field of psychiatry. But anyway, but the psychiatrist, the Swiss psychiatrist Carl Jung, was always fond of telling a story about a particular client he had who started to have very specific dream patterns, where she described being waist deep in a pit that was filled with filthy sewage, and it was on fire. Okay. And the more she struggled to free herself, the more she sank deeper and deeper. You know, almost like being in quicksand, but it was filthy sewage and fire. Now, in the dream, she constantly called out to Dr. Jung, who was just on the bank watching her, but just silently standing there. And she would call out to him, "Help me out, Dr. Jung, help me out, get me out of here." And in her dream, Dr. Jung did nothing but watch. He didn't even say a word. And just before she was about to go under, she would wake up. And night after night, she had this dream again with no reply from Dr. Jung in the dream. He was there, but he was silent. And, you know, she shared this dream with Dr. Jung. And then she shared, you know, how one night the dream changed. And this really piqued Dr. Jung's interest. And so he says, like, "Please tell me what happened." And, you know, in her original dream started out the same way, with her being in a pit filled with waste and fire. And she, you know, as the nights before, continued to struggle to free herself as always. And as always, she called out to Dr. Jung to help her out of this pit. But this time, in her dream, she was struggling even harder to get out. She was starting to panic, and she was also sinking faster. And now, about only one shoulder was visible. And Dr. Jung was intrigued by this, and he goes, "Well, what happened?" And she said, "Well, Dr. Jung, you did kind of an interesting thing. You finally reached out to me, but you reached out with your foot, and you pushed me the whole way under. Then you said, not out, but through. Not out, but through." And Jung sat there for the longest time, and he interpreted this, you know, client's dream as her doing some very excellent inner work, and continued to encourage her to face her issues instead of wanting to be rescued from the painful memories. Again, not out, but through. And this story from Carl Jung's journals, and, you know, demonstrates that his client was really no different from any of us who face difficult memories and traumatic past. You know, we too may be tempted to want to get out of a situation as quickly and painlessly as possible, only to discover that to find the true inner healing, we have to embrace the through. Not out, but through. See, we actually, I think, make it harder than what it needs to be. Because let's just sit with this for a little bit. How do we actually achieve this? How do we actually get through? Or if you're working, you know, as, you know, somebody in like a helping profession, a helping relationship, how do you bless the through of another who is just wanting to get out, to just run, just, I don't want to be in here anymore. I need to get out. And you sit there with them and you go, no, you need to get through this, but you're not going to get through it alone. How do we achieve this? Well, we actually have three specific, let's call them vehicles, which show us the way through, namely forgiveness, gratitude, and love. Now, don't go poo-pooing these three actions because of their perceived simplicity. Because if you look at your life and ask yourself several important questions, you're going to get your answer. For example, where in my life, personally and professionally, do I struggle the most? What causes me to lose sleep night after night after night? What has led me to self-medicate my problems and feelings with alcohol and drugs? And why do I often have the hardest time getting through the holidays? Well, if any of your answers involve the relationships in your lives, then you've come to the place where forgiveness, gratitude, and love will show you the way through to find your healing. And ironically, you know, many people believe and treat these three characteristics of forgiveness, gratitude, and love separately. They actually work in tandem with one another, signifying how our healing can best be found in removing everything that gets in our way of discovering who we truly are as souls, namely unforgiveness or bitterness or contempt for others, and every other example of negative and victimized thinking that keeps us and others mentally, emotionally, physically, and even spiritually wounded. And yet finding our healing through the pain by forgiveness and walking in gratitude and expressing unconditional love, that's always the first step. Not out, but through. Well, Carl Rogers, he wasn't a contemporary of Freud. He came much later, but he was also a psychiatrist and, you know, very popular in the 50s and 60s. And he was the founder of the person-centered therapy. He once said that when a person is hurting, or let's say a person is confused or troubled or anxious, or they feel alienated or terrified, or when a person is doubtful of their self-worth, or maybe they're uncertain as to their identity, then understanding is called for. The gentle and sensitive companionship of an empathic stance provides illumination and healing. In such situations, deep understanding is, I believe, the most precious gift one can give to another. And this is how we bless the through. Because when we heal ourselves, we can heal others. When we forgive ourselves, we can forgive others. When we live in gratitude with ourselves, we can certainly live in gratitude with everyone. And when we love ourselves, we can truly love others. Well, with depending on where you are in the States or in the world, you know, and here in the Mid-Atlantic region, we've been enjoying some nice warmer weather. You know, spring's right around the corner. And more people are getting out and walking. And, you know, experts say that's the best form of exercise we can do. apart from rock climbing or surfing and mountain biking or whatever else you're into, okay, skydiving and so forth. But most people I know enjoy a good long walk or a good long hike through the woods or a forest. And no matter where we are on the trail or a back road, we sometimes pick up a pebble in our shoe. We've all been there. Come on, we've all been there. And think about it. You're moving along at a good pace. You're very peaceful, and hopefully you don't have any pain in your hips and knees when all of a sudden you do feel a pain on the bottom of your foot, and you realize somehow you picked up a stone or a little pebble. Now, your first thought might be to ignore it because let's be honest, we don't really want to stop and remove the shoe and get rid of it. So we tell ourselves, okay, I'll just keep going. I can handle this. It's not really a big deal. And as we continue on, we start to shake our foot to shift the pebble to another area under our foot that we can tolerate for at least another 10 or 20 steps. Now, the pebble is still in your shoe, but you've taken some action to minimize feeling its pain, or so you think. But over time, with the more steps you take, pain begins to intensify. And if it gets that worse, you may even begin to bleed into your sock because of where the pebble has been rubbing. But now you have a sore. And when you can no longer tolerate the pain and no longer keep shifting the pebble back and forth, you finally stop, take off your shoe, and shake the pebble free. So let's stay with this pebble as a metaphor for something far greater than just simply a pain in the foot. Because isn't it amazing, the kind of a bigger lesson here, a little pebble in the shoe can teach us. And what would happen if we started to see everything in our lives as a metaphor, such as when a physical pain just might teach us something about our emotional pain or our spiritual pain. Because you see, a pebble in the shoe, if we're paying attention, just might awaken us to something else we need to take care of in our lives. In fact, that pebble in the shoe just might remind us of something that is even more painful for us, perhaps something that nobody else knows. And so, in going deeper with this metaphor, perhaps the real issue of why we don't want to forgive is that we want to keep ourselves protected from further wounding. Or we don't want to live in gratitude because, well, if I have to let go of my, lack of gratitude, you have to take on more responsibility and so forth. Muhammad Ali was one who once said that, it isn't the mountains ahead to climb that wears you out. It's the pebble in your shoe. And that's pretty good advice from a man who achieved greatness, not only after overcoming many challenges growing up as a young black man in an era that was riddled with racial discrimination. Now, as we're talking about forgiveness and walking in gratitude and learning to live in relationship with others where there is a respect and seeing the value and dignity and worth of another and loving one another, I know what some of you might be thinking out there. Okay, I know. I get hurt and you want me to forgive the offender, but I'm the one that got hurt. The offender should do something for me. And yeah, I get that. But this kind of thinking really traps us. It victimizes us in our pain and offers no plausible solution, especially if offenders don't realize that they did something wrong, or if they do, they just don't feel like making amends. They could care less. Okay. Now, this situation seems intractable and locks victims into a space filled with hurt. And carrying this kind of hurt can be a burden to, let's say, our social, physical, mental, emotional well-being. And forgiveness eases this, and not surprisingly, is linked to improved health and quality of life. In other words, your internal organs will also thank you. Now, ironically here, people's beliefs about forgiveness and even their beliefs about religion and spirituality may actually hinder their ability to forgive. In fact, you might even discover that the concept of forgiveness has been, let's say, incorporated into multiple beliefs, you know, such as just ask yourself right now, you know, what forgiveness looks like to you. Is it a means of connecting forgiveness to your belief systems? Where does it fit? How does it show up in your relationships and well-being? Or do you assume that forgiving someone is equivalent to pardoning them and or condoning the offense that injured you? Well, let's clear something up. People, yes, are to be held accountable for their actions. And yet, forgiveness also releases yourself and others from having to carry around a mental, emotional, a physical, even a spiritual burden that often turns into bitterness if those things aren't worked through. Well, I would really, really love to hear what's on your heart about this subject. This is something we can all relate to. So again, if you would like to call in, you know, no pressure, but if you'd like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And as I said, I'll be taking your calls after this break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Howe. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Hey, welcome back, everybody. I'm Dr. James Hauck, and you're listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. I just want to recap earlier in the show that I was talking about how we often struggle with difficult memories and our traumatic paths. And honestly, we may be tempted to want to get out of a situation as quickly and painlessly as possible, only to discover that to find true inner healing or the lessons that situation needs to teach us, we discover that we have to embrace the through, not out, but through. See, we want to get out of something as fast as possible, but sometimes we go through it. And this is a theme that comes up again and again and again, not out, but through. And we realize that as we are going through certain situations, even good times, or not so good times, but painful times, times of celebration, times of joy, times of happiness, times of death and dying, sorrow. We don't go through things alone. And we actually have three specific tools or vehicles which show us the way through, and that is forgiveness, gratitude, and love. And although many people believe and treat these characteristics separately, they do actually work together with one another, you know, and it often points to just a higher learning of how our healing can be best found in removing everything that gets in the way of discovering who we truly are as souls. And these things that get in our way is things like unforgiveness and bitterness and contempt for others. And every other example of like a negative or victimized thinking. that keeps us and others wounded. Wounded on a mental, emotional, physical, and even spiritual level. So all in all, leave your old ways of thinking and seeing behind in order to embrace supreme consciousness and the full realization of who you are as a soul of light. So therefore, you know, finding our healing through the pain by living in offering and receiving forgiveness and living in forgiveness, walking in gratitude, expressing unconditional love is always, always, always the first step. Why don't we heal? We have to look inward. What gets in the way of keeping us bitter? What keeps, you know, what gets in the way of keeping us wounded? What gets in the way of just hardening our hearts, sealing all that pain within? When there are ways of offering that forgiveness, that receiving forgiveness, living in a state of being forgiven, learning to live in gratitude, be happy for yourselves, be happy for others, expressing unconditional love. Even something as simple as buying a cup of coffee or paying for the person behind you, you know, paying for their breakfast as you're through a drive-through or whatever the situation might be. Just little ways that awaken gratitude and expresses love. Like, you don't have to know the person, but it's how you show it, how you live it, how your presence gives off, you know, the forgiveness, gratitude, love, peace, joy, light. And, you know, in addition to many spiritual practices and rituals out there, you know, many people today are often engaged in meditation in order to find their healing, grace, and peace within themselves. And yet, as the Buddhist Vietnamese teacher Thich Nhat Hanh once said, he said, meditation is not to get out of society, but instead to prepare you for re-entry into society. This is what we call engaged Buddhism. When we go to a meditation center, we may have the impression that we have to leave everything behind, family, society, and all the complications involved with them, and come as an individual in order to practice and search for peace. But this is already an illusion, because in Buddhism, there is no such thing as an individual. Meditation is not to get out of society, but it prepares us to re-enter society. Well, since the beginning of this year, beginning of the year of 2025, I've had some pretty intriguing conversations with the kids and teenagers that I counsel, all on the subject of forgiveness. And interestingly enough, these conversations all center on the theme of video games. You know, sooner or later, it's going to come back to, you know, whatever the video games that they enjoy playing. It's just, it's inevitable. It's kind of funny. And unfortunately, many times video games are not seen as ways to teach kids about the real lessons in life. And yet, isn't everything a teachable moment for us? I mean, for example, in the video game, let's say that you're trying to reach an end or trying to reach a goal, whether it's getting to a finish line or reaching the top of a mountain, or trying to find a hidden treasure, let's just say, okay? And most of the time, it takes several attempts to succeed on a certain level or levels. Or in other words, no one person playing the game has ever reached the goal of the game without making a few mistakes along the way and having to start over. And yet, this is where life's lessons about forgiveness lie. Because when we forgive, or when we ask another for forgiveness, it's like we've been given another chance to start over with ourselves, or start over with others, and we can even start over with God. See, forgiveness allows us to re-enter society a little bit wiser, a little bit more engaged in living in gratitude, because we know how much we've been forgiven. And ironically, unforgiveness causes us to withdraw from others, doesn't it? So, how many out there in internet radio land have ever tried to tie a braid? Yeah, maybe it was, you tied your hair into a braid, or you braided sweet grass, or maybe you braided ribbons for a little flair on packages or decorations around Christmas time or birthdays or Easter or whatever. But either way, we know that braiding something makes it stronger because of the intertwining of the fibers or the strands. Well, earlier this year, I needed to go to the hardware store for something, and I had to actually buy some rope. And of course, you go down the aisle where they have rope, and there are all kinds of thickness and lengths and colors and strengths. And, it's just like, you got to push the button and like, I need help here. And hopefully someone comes to help you that you're not on your own. And I stopped and I looked at some of the heavier and thicker ropes that they had there. And, as I looked carefully at them, I discovered the strength of the rope was indeed in the weaving or the braiding of other strands or pieces of the rope, which, of course, made it very strong. Now, we can apply this same analogy, let's say, or metaphor to our lives, especially when it comes to forgiveness and gratitude. As I said, most of the time, society wants to treat these themes as separate or individual. And yet, when it comes to integrating our spirituality and our mental health, forgiveness and gratitude can never be separated. Well, we can try to make this out to be a which came first, chicken and egg kind of dilemma. But in all actuality, I've never met a person who didn't express gratitude in everything that they do and everything that they say, without also having forgiveness in their heart. Forgiveness and gratitude really go hand in hand, just like peanut butter and jelly, or say it with me, people, peas and carrots. Because when we both have forgiveness and gratitude, it opens up the heart like nothing else in our lives and allows an authentic love of ourself and others to emerge. So how do we go about cultivating forgiveness, gratitude, and love? Well, let's say that we need to begin with the most difficult people we have ever encountered, our family. And this is not a joke. We begin with our family. Forgiveness and gratitude has to begin with our families, because this is often where we've experienced some of the most pain and disappointment and hurt in our lives. The psychological, emotional, physical, and even spiritual pain. We have to begin with our family, or even family of origin issues, because these are the first people who gave us a sense of how the world works and what it means to be in a relationship, what it means to trust, what it means to love, and so on and so forth. But, I just want to, if I could take liberty here, I just wanted us to expand our definition of family to include not just our immediate and extended family members, but also family members that have gone on before us, as well as those who will come after us. And this is something that the family systems theorist, Murray Bowen, suggested, that a person cannot be fully understood in isolation. That is, they can't be fully understood apart from the greater context of their family or their community or their culture and the world. And yet, within these larger systems, people struggle to differentiate themselves and to be guided by their own thoughts and feelings and actions. So, in other words, although individuals desire to think and live for themselves and developing, let's say, creative and critical thinking skills, they're often drawn back into, let's say, prevailing and often codependent emotional patterns that characterize families, and cultures, societies, and so forth. And yet, if we're honest with ourselves, we may live in part of the world where society's definition of differentiation is really a mixed message. I mean, think about it this way. On one hand, differentiation is often taken to, let's say, an extreme, as we're told to look out for number one, be an individual, walk to the beat of your own drum, even at the expense of others, if necessary. And yet, on the other hand, there are times when we are also expected to go with the flow, don't make waves, fall in line, go with the status quo, don't rock the boat. And yet, how often are we content to keep walking with that pebble in our shoe, knowing that with each step we take, the pain keeps shooting through our feet and eventually up our leg? Well, whenever we think about ancestral healing, you know, those who have gone on before us, we might be hesitant to begin this process because, let's be honest, we might still hold a tremendous amount of bitterness and rage and contempt against those who have committed physical, emotional, or sexual abuse against us or our families. You know, it's like the things that they don't tell you about when you're searching that family tree. You know, like, don't shake it too hard because you don't never know who's going to come falling out. Well, we have to come to terms with that. Who were the people that came before us? How did they live? What were the times in which they lived? What do they need to be forgiven of? What do they need to be thanked for? And so forth. In fact, as we flip through our family albums where we go through our phones, you know, and like, oh, there they are, we may discover they're not always filled with pleasant memories. Instead, these pages or these files may be filled with more memories of abuse or control or oppression or cruelty. And yet, have you ever thought of yourself as being the transitional generation that no longer has to carry such wounds? That our ancestors as well put those burdens down, they no longer have to carry them either? Because we all possess inner strength, resources, and gifts to make this happen. So yes, it's true, wounded people wound people. I mean, intergenerational trauma attests to this. However, people who live their lives in forgiveness, being forgiven, living in gratitude and love, transform generations. And discovering the power of your soul's voice is a tremendous catalyst for change. So I tell you what, give you a little bit of a homework assignment here, okay? Let's see. For the next few days, okay? It's Wednesday, so let's say tomorrow, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, okay? Just carry it into the weekend. For the next few days, be particularly mindful to journey any insights, impressions, or dreams that come up, okay? Don't judge them. Just write them down. As much or as little, you know, it could be a sentence, it could be a paragraph, it could be a whole page. Doesn't matter, okay? And also, in addition, just make note of any changes in your perspectives regarding your present relationships. How do you view yourself and others? In what ways do you now treat yourself and others differently? And how do others appear to treat you? In what ways are you more understanding and loving and compassionate, and more forgiving and patient with yourself and others? And more importantly, because I've spoken on this many times, how have you noticed that you are telling your family stories now from a different perspective? Okay. Just make note of any insights, impressions, or dreams that come up. Don't judge them. Just write them down. Okay? Because where your thoughts are, that's where energy follows. And so just see where the energy is taking you as coming off your thoughts. Now, in creating a living dialogue with one's ancestors, let's say, Remember that our soul connection with them is really not about placing blame or finding fault for wounds suffered from intergenerational trauma. You know, it's like we don't go back into our ancestors to say, gee, thanks for that one. We don't point our finger and say, you know what, now I know why our family's really messed up. Or you guys blew it way back then. It's not about that. Because if that's where your heart is, don't even attempt this. It's not about placing blame. It's about healing. Healing for yourself, healing for them, and healing for the ones who have yet to be born so they don't have to worry about or struggle with or suffer from any of this. Okay? But instead, it's this dialogue that you create with your ancestors, it's this ongoing opportunity for healing and reconciliation, as well as stopping the harmful psychological, emotional, and spiritual patterns from being passed on to, you know, unborn generations. So considering yourself as being the transitional generation requires us to really stand in the gap, as it were, and offer this emotional, psychological, spiritual release, not just for ourselves, but also for all family members, regardless of whether or not they were perpetrators or the victims. See, I have friends who set their intention to heal intergenerational trauma from the perspective of the unborn generations. You know, much like going back seven generations, let's just say, to heal souls that are stuck due to trauma, they place themselves in the role or the voice of seven generations into the future. And interestingly, still many people ask me, well, how do you heal from intergenerational trauma when you may not even know your present family, let alone how in the world do I connect with ancestors and those that have yet to be born? Well, the answer is that religious and social ceremonies and rituals bring us back into a spiritual, psychological, and emotional and physical alignment or an awareness with God, ourselves, and our relations. Because you see, no matter what nationality, what race or ethnicity or region of the world in which we are from, every culture has its own unique celebrations. And many ceremonies mark, let's say, transitions in our lives, such as like graduations and weddings and funerals and job promotions and so on and so forth. And others are often more seasonal, and they follow like a yearly observance, such as birthdays or anniversaries or holidays or solstice celebrations. And regardless of when a particular ceremony is observed or whether or not people are connected to their community, there are always universal teachings, often hidden in the rituals, that can be applied to all of humanity. You've been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm Dr. James Houck. Thank you for spending this hour with me. Please, I invite you that if you have any comments about tonight's broadcast or if you'd like to continue this discussion, I am all in. Just shoot me an email. Just go on the website and you'll see my contact information, and I just look forward to hearing from you. So in the meantime, in the next 2 weeks or so, everybody be safe out there. Everybody behave themselves out there. And hopefully that you begin this process or continue this process of learning to walk in forgiveness, gratitude, and love. Take care. Bye-bye.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Houck. It's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.